EMS sporting event checklist, healing damaged heart cells, deciding who pays for ambulance calls, and we'll catch up with part two of our segment with Jerry Barrett on his trip to Africa to educate people there about EMS and general health care. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's episode. There's a great, really great show for you coming up this week, and I'm excited about it. There's an interesting news item coming up about a pregame checklist for EMS coaches and trainers attending local sporting events, and that's really cool. Then after the news, we're going to check back in with Jerry Barrett from Australia with part two of his segment from his trip to Africa for EMS and first aid education for the communities there. All of that's coming up next here on the MedicCast. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to make sure that you are checking out the additional information, the additional links and resources available for you over at the MedicCast blog. You'll find that over at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And you can scroll down there to find any previous episodes. So you can look there and find all kinds of things. And if you can't find it there, you can find it in the search box by putting keywords in and searching just like you would at Google. It'll find things on the site for you if you're looking for something in particular. Take some time and make sure you follow up on the information there that you get on the show. Understand how it applies to what you do in EMS practice and what your protocols tell you you're supposed to do. If you want to get back in touch with me, hope you'll do so. Go ahead and shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com with your comments, your questions, or something else about the show. You can also send me suggestions or interview ideas for future episodes. But either way, just want to let you know I will respond back to every email that comes in, so you can be ready for that. And also, just want to let you know, keep an eye out for the mobile app of the MedicCast. So if you're an iPhone, Android, a Windows phone, Windows 8 user, you can get the brand new free MedicCast app from your device's store. Just search for MedicCast EMS app. And if you already have it, please go over and leave a comment and rate the app in the store so you can be an active supporter of the show and let other folks know what you think about the show and the app. It's a great way to support the community here at the MedicCast. That's enough for contact information. Don't forget, we're going to be at the ProMed Network Podcast Studio recording live this week in Las Vegas. If you're going to be there, or if you're there and listening to this right now, please come by our booth and say hi. You can come up and say hi to me or any of the other podcasters there. We're over in booth 669, and it's a great opportunity. I love these conferences because I get to go out and meet the MedicCast audience. So please come by the booth and say hi and support us and support our sponsors there. Physiocontrol sponsoring our booth there, and we have some other sponsors for individual episodes, but check it out and find out what we're doing at EMS World Expo. And remember, if you ever run into any of our sponsors, make sure you tell them thank you for supporting the show and tell them you heard about them here on the MedicCast. Starting off this week's news, we look at a story coming out of West Virginia that puts us in preparation mode for this year's high school sports seasons. Dr. Jim Kyle is the Emergency Medical Services Director for West Virginia's Region 1. He has assembled a pregame medical timeout checklist, and this checklist is for EMS and medical personnel attending high school sporting events. Now, the checklist is meant to be reviewed about 30 minutes prior to the start of the game with attending medical staff, healthcare professionals, EMS, and trainers. And it allows the staff and the professionals from the healthcare environment to prepare and make sure that all the equipment that's supposed to be there is there so that they're ready for emergencies. The checklist reviews whether the AED has been charged, where specialized equipment such as the wrench that is used to remove the face masks from football helmets, and where is that located? Where are specialty trauma centers in the area, or where will we land a medical transport helicopter in case of an emergency situation? This checklist is something I think is really cool and brings to mind something I talk about frequently here on the show. When it's this certain time of year, whatever time of year it might be, it's important for us to review the types of emergencies we might expect to see during that time of year. With high school sports season upon us, we need to review procedures for responding to local schools, especially high schools and sporting events, and find out how we're going to work together with trainers and high school coaches to take care of injured players. What do they need us to do? When do they really need our help, or when can they handle it themselves? Take a moment and ask some questions with your partner or your team at the station to make sure you understand what you're supposed to do when you respond to these specialized locations and emergencies. Next up in the news, we take a look at what many consider to be the holy grail for heart attack recovery. Scientists continue to work on developing ways to encourage cardiac tissue damaged during a heart attack to heal itself. So what treatments can we expect in the future to do this? One approach is looking at preventing fibroblast cells from creating scar tissue in the cardiac muscle following a heart attack. This scar tissue forms and it blocks the natural conductivity pathways for the cardiac muscle. Scientists are looking at ways to use stem cells to replace damaged cardiac tissue before the fibroblasts move in and form that scar tissue. Now, this treatment is certainly not yet ready for use in actual patients, but it will be one of those things that may determine which cardiac center we go to in the future. I mean, think about it. We might, like we go to a cath center, we might be going to a stem cell center. Currently, there are two different cardiac research centers looking at this problem, including the Gladstone Institute of Cardiovascular Disease in San Francisco, and also the researchers in the Biology and Biochemistry Department at the University of Houston. Now, while it's not ready for prime time, who knows? Maybe someday we could be injecting cardiac stem cells into a patient right there in the field during a cardiac event. Stay tuned for more on these and other cardiac care developments. I'll keep bringing them to you here on the MedicCast. Finally, in the news this week, we're going to take a look at an age-old EMS question: who pays for EMS calls? A recent story from the Los Angeles Times newspaper points to a question about city services and paying for ambulance calls. Many people in our communities think that ambulance transportation should be provided for free, just like fire response services. They don't understand that the medical emergency care provided by our ambulance crews, it's not covered by their property taxes like fire responses are, even though they may be coming from the fire department. This comes back to how important it is that we educate our public on what to expect from us when they call 911 for emergency transport. Often, insurance companies and Medicare will refuse to pay for what they call non-essential ambulance charges or transports. And when that happens, the patient ends up being responsible for paying the bill. We know that, but often the patients don't, and we need to find a way to relay this to them so they understand and make an intelligent decision about refusal of care. The Los Angeles Times article does a good job of that, and it shows how their EMS service is working in and around their community. A similar article in your local newspaper might go a long way, too, to educating about how billing works for ambulance transport in your area, because we're all a little bit different. I urge you to take a look at this article and look through it so that you understand what is going on and how they answered some of the questions for their patients and their families and how you might be able to adapt that to what you're doing in your community. So check it out. Coming up in this week's Tip of the Week, I bring you part two of my interview with Jerry Barrett from Australia. I interviewed Jerry quite a few years ago when we talked about tactical EMS here on the MedicCast, and I reconnected with Jerry recently, and you may have heard part one of the interview segment last week on the show. This week, we're going to be talking primarily about Jerry's innovative first aid and hygiene tools that he developed for third world areas. It's amazing how the naturally innovative mind of a paramedic will come up with novel solutions to even worldwide healthcare problems. Here's that segment with Jerry Barrett. Well, you know, Jerry, it seems like just the next logical step, you've got your your first aid training you're doing over there, your EMS training you're doing over there. How about, did you get an opportunity to share some of your picture-based first aid training with anybody while you were there?
Yeah, I actually did my my project over there. So I did my data collection, which is the founding of my thesis for my master's. So it's the first time I've actually tried out in anger. I've had missionaries. The artist, my friend of mine, has quite a lot to do with the missionaries. So he's actually sent some. But the deal is that he's doing my art free of charge, and I'm making all my work free of charge to any missionary that wants to go out to wherever they want to go out and basically practice or teach hygiene or first aid. Will have access to all my work. So it's been used in Papua New Guinea and India as a trial basis. But this is the first time I've seen it actually tested on a low literacy group. So I had my group all set up. It was a mixture of mostly Islamic guys. It was quite an Islamic community that is built around a mosque. There was Christians there in the same group. There was males, there was females. My ethics approval actually only permitted me to work with adults. So there were no children. On the first day, the first part was to ask them questions about what they knew of hygiene, what they knew of germs, where germs came from. And the big question was, does soap kill germs? So majority gathering my papers on that evening, everyone had said no. They had no idea what germs were. They had no idea where they came from. You know, some people equated it with malaria and stuff like that. But on the question, does soap kill germs? They nearly all to a one had said no, or I'm not sure. You know, I gave them the not sure option. So I delivered my little demonstration, and basically this is a first aid in pictures. So it's designed to be, in fact, I've got one just here. So it's designed to be a poster.
Okay.
So on the front is a poster, but on the back, there's simple notes. So anyone can facilitate it. Anyone can read it. So it's in English at the moment. So that was given. So we gave a 30-minute instructional period. They asked questions. Now on the second day, we got them all back again, and we asked them the same questions. Do you know what a germ is? Yes, I do. Yeah, it's comes from your poo, and it comes from dirt, or do you know where they live? Yeah, it lives in dirt, and it lives in water, bad water. And okay, vital question: does soap kill germs? Yes, every single one of them said yes, and they all said that it's prompted them to wash their hands more frequently, and that was great. I mean, that was great for me. That's just proved my theory. But the bonus was an old guy came up to me and said, obviously I can't speak Swahili. He said to my translator, he was overjoyed. And he came up, he said, oh, thank you. He said, do you know, last night I took my card back in my pocket because I produced some pocket ones for them to take. And my 10-year-old son found it in my jacket and said, what's this, Dad? And he pulled it out of my pocket and he looked at it. And he can't read English. He had no idea. He said, but he could read that story. And he came up to me. He said, now, Dad, I know that I've got to wash my hands now. I know where germs come from. I've got to wash my hands more frequently to kill the germs. And that was just by purely looking at my picture book. And that's, that's a 10-year-old. You know, he's got basically primary education. Can't read English. Can't, let alone speak English. So he had no idea what the word said on the back, but he could work it out just by the picture. So that's just,
That's a perfect example of exactly what you're trying to do. And I get chills just thinking about it, because you've changed how many lives just from that one person viewing that, and how many other people took the similar story back with them to their families and are sharing that. You've impacted the health and safety and futures of so many people just from making that presentation.
Of course, and that's just on one subject. And I mean, look at basic hygiene. I mean, that covers everything from look at trachoma. The percentage of trachoma in Africa, it's huge, and that's just one. There's just one condition that's affected by hand hygiene. And the guys, one of my questions was, do you wash before sex and after sex? You know, and they will fight. This is a, you know, really conservative Islamic community. They all just like little children. They were laughing and giggling, and you know, when they got to know me after the second day, they said, "Well, you know, well, what do you wash after sex?" And I go, "Look, you know, if it's dirty, wash it." And they all just fell about laughing. And they said, "Oh, yeah, that's a good answer." Yeah, I said, "If it's dirty, wash it." You know, and that's you know, they're found in India. You know, in my literary research, so I found. Education is the key here. In India, they counseled sex workers, you know, female prostitutes, about HIV and the spread of AIDS and hepatitis B. And the rate of hepatitis B and HIV dropped by about 40%,
mm-hmm.
because the sex workers, all of a sudden, they knew how AIDS and hepatitis B was transmitted. So they did everything they could to stop it. They insisted on condoms. That's because they understood the transmission process.
Right.
So that one simple intervention of getting people to understand, you know, you've got literacy, but you've also got health literacy, which is completely different. And you can have, you know, as many posters and public education campaigns as you want. And, you know, there's millions and millions and millions of dollars spent on these.
Right.
But if no one can read them, what's the point?
Yeah, and so, I think it's, you know, we take so much of this for granted out there that we wonder about some of the things that we just accept, you know, germ theory and something we grew up with, basic hygiene, cleanliness, because it's become part of our culture, and parents share it with their children. But that's not the case. And it's very simple to educate, but you have to understand where your starting points are.
Of course, and that led to, I mean, that created a problem in itself, because they then said, well, you know, access to soap, and that's a good point. You know, they have soap because they wash their clothes. I mean, you know, the washing in Africa in the remote communities is a bar of soap and a rock and water. So they hadn't really equated like soap. They didn't really think soap washing soap was the same as normal soap. But my plan is that, I mean, I've been trying to bang my head against a brick wall, but I go into hotels, as we all do, and, you know, you get all these bars of soap,
right.
These little mini bars of soap that people use once or twice and they get thrown away. And I've been trying to bang my head against a wall of trying to get some hotel chains just to collect these bars of soap and send them to places like Africa where, you know, these guys, these communities would use it. You know, you could dish out to schools. You know, school kids could have a bar of used soap, you know. It costs nothing. And, in fact, this soap's thrown away. How many soaps have you seen thrown away from,
yeah.
You know, where people have used it, washed their hands once or twice, and it's a, you know, 20-cent bar of soap, and it gets binned. Whereas,
yeah.
You know, why can't we just send those to Africa and places like that? Coupled with this, and then you've got the means and the know-how for people to be able to wash their hands, and, you know, even if it prevents 10% of infection, how many people in Africa would that save?
Oh, it's really, like I said, it's giving me chills just thinking about it, because from a general public health perspective, it is very simple. It's just finding the logistical tools to make it work and getting the resources out there, like you said, and providing the means, because education alone isn't the only thing we need to do. We need to provide them the tools to utilize the information education we give them.
Of course, it's a two-part scenario. You know, you can't go along and teach them to fish and don't give them a fish rod. You know, it's a two-part thing. But we're not talking millions of dollars here. We're talking, you know, the stuff that gets thrown away. You
right.
know, people, the general public, don't think twice of.
Yeah, the cost of postage, the cost of shipping, is minimal when compared to the lives saved.
Of course. I mean, how much do like big organizations spend on publicity or sending aid to places like this? And we're looking at just used bars of soap. So distribution, you know, wouldn't be a problem, because, you know, through the NGOs and you know, non-government organisations, and they had organised distribution of soap, and you know, with this aid, and it put the two together. I've always thought about having these modules. I mean, this is the first of a few modules. I'm doing one on snake bites. I'm doing one on malaria. I'm doing one on water sterilisation. So they're all a work in progress. They, you know, I work full time, as you know. So all my research stuff is done, and this is, you know, this is over and above that. So when I can fit time in, I'm designing more and more modules. And as I said, anyone in the States that listening to me, if you're a missionary and you want to use any of these products that I've produced, any of the artwork, any of the resources, then just contact me and I'll give it to you free of charge. This isn't a money making idea. This is to spread information to people that don't have it.
Yeah. And how can folks get a hold of you, Jerry? Is there an easy way on the web or look you up on Facebook?
Facebook is always good. I'm on Facebook. I've got a website and part of my I've got a missionary page set up on my website, which is extrememedical.com.au, all one word, Extreme Medical. And go to the missionary page or the pilgrim page, and you'll find examples of the first aid in pictures there. I'm trying to get a dedicated site set up just so people can go straight there and download all the stuff. Also, the artist Ian Coate, he does a lot of Christian art, and on his page there's ways of downloading the first module for anyone that wants to basically. I've also got public health information for missionaries, things about mosquito and first aid kits and malaria, mosquito nets. So it's a package, and like I said, it's all free of charge for people to download.
Well, great. Jerry, thanks for coming on the show and sharing this amazing information and really two parts of it, the education about EMS and providing those ambulances and an appropriate kit, and also about some of the things you're doing with improving public health worldwide.
Yeah, it's just it just came together so well. It's just one of these karmistic moments that it just fell together and it happened. And like I said, I've already made a footprint on imprint on people's lives in Africa, and it's just I've just got to dedicate myself to following up and doing better and producing this tool. And there's so many places. Africa's just one of the places. There's India. There's anywhere in the world with a low literacy rate, and that's even in places in Australia and America. You know, people have got either poor literacy or poor health literacy. Then people just don't understand that all the published all the literature that's being published and public access campaigns and public health campaigns, they just don't understand. So that what I'm doing can be used anywhere. Africa, India, you know, I'm getting it printed in Swahili soon, so just as a request from the guys over there. So look, you know, whatever I do is going to be available for people that want to do it free of charge. So
great.
Well, feel free, contact me, please.
I'll have folks get in touch with you, and I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. And Jerry, thanks again for coming on. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and remind you to follow up on all of the information from this week's show over at mediccast.com/blog. When you get there, you'll find the show notes link right there at the top of the page, and you can take a moment and check out and follow up on all of that information, the links to the news items you find there, also all of the tips and additional resource links I put there. All of that's there for you as well. You can also sign up for the email newsletter while you're there. There's a little form right there on the right-hand side of the page. Just fill that out, and you can actually get all those links and things sent directly to your email inbox every week. I also welcome your comments and suggestions directly by email, so if you want to, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. You can send in your news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I look forward to hearing from you. And let me know, because I will make sure I get back in touch with you. I work hard to respond to every email that comes in, so please, please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media sites and pages, well, you can do that. You can find me most places under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over at Twitter or Facebook, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic, and friend or follow me on those sites. You can also check out the MedicCast on our very own Facebook page. We have over 4,000 followers there. It's growing all the time. Head over and join this growing community at facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button at the top of the page and join the MedicCast community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, tips, and more every Monday morning so you can kick off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the Medicast today and share the show with somebody you know. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.